Well, now that all the snow boots have been removed, I would like to welcome you all. In the spirit of gratitude and respect, we acknowledge the Saanich First Nations on whose traditional lands we are gathered. So welcome and good morning to all of you who have once again stepped away from heating elements and have braved the elements of winter to be here this briskish morning. Our welcome also extends, of course, to those who have chosen to stay at home and who are joining us by live stream. So once again, hello everyone out there in internet land. My name is Doug McGinnis, and I'm honored to serve as your worship associate today. This is a well-deserved weekend off for our co-ministers, Reverend Melora and Reverend Shauna. Happily for us, they will be returning this coming Tuesday. In their place today, we're fortunate to be hearing from our guest speaker, Martin Settle. So his dedication to us can partly be gauged by the long flight time from his home in Ottawa and how little winter relief he's been getting while he's been here. You might not know that Martin is Executive Director of the Unitarian Service Committee of Canada, or USC Canada, but you might remember him as an important member of this our larger community and as a past speaker here. I think he was here. You were here 2 years ago. In his USC role, Martin has traveled to 10 of the 12 USC Canada-supported program countries, and he is currently co-chairs the International Development Sector's Steering Committee on the Prevention of and Response to Sexual Misconduct. He is a former lay minister in the United Church of Canada, a father of two, and least of all, he describes himself as the office geek. So we could use a few of those around here, I think, from time to time. I know there's more good things to tell about Martin, but on behalf of this congregation, I simply want to welcome you. Welcome, Martin. And before we begin, once again, we have a rather lengthy list of announcements. And I will just say that directly after the service, please join others here in the Lion Hall at the end of this hallway for refreshments and light snacks. You'll recall from last Sunday that a request was made for members to complete a location task force survey. For those of you who would like some assistance in completing the survey, several members of the task force will set up in the Lion Hall with their computers to offer their help. As of noon yesterday, 168 responses have been received. That's a pretty good response rate so far, but your voice is important and we want to get 100%, so please make sure that you that your comments are made known. Beginning at noon, we are blessed to have another special guest speaker, Cora Halsworth. Cora is a consultant with One Earth and is the co-lead of One Planet, the One Planet Saanich Initiative. She will be speaking here in the sanctuary to explain the background, current status, and plans of the One Planet Saanich Initiative and how you can participate in this. Whatever level of interest you might have, please join Cora and others to consider becoming a part of something that is both highly meaningful and transformative. I've also been advised this morning that, unfortunately, I think it was due to someone being snowbound, there will be no sandwiches sold for that event or available for that event. There is, of course, the Red Barn across the way if you have time to go and grab a sandwich before the talk, which should last about 1 hour, I'm told. And so for those of you who have been appreciating the short trip on a country road to a beautiful setting with top jazz musicians, complete with the articulate and deeply profound musings of Reverend Shauna, you'll be sure not to miss today's Vespers. Appropriately, the theme for this event is Passages. Winter Vespers of 2019 continues with the Gord and Olivier Clements Quartet, featuring both Gord Clements, who is an active classical and jazz performer on saxophone and bass clarinet, and his son, Oliver. And he is an international touring musician and recording artist, and he'll be playing the trumpet and flugelhorn. The horns will be backed by Rob Cheremy on guitar and Bruce Michael on bass. So it's going to be a big event. I'm hoping that you can, as many of you as possible, can be there. This hour of music and celebration begins at 7 p.m. this evening. And finally, the final notice, as per usual, as persuasively as you can, please ask your electronic device to join you in worship mode for the balance of this morning's service. So to begin our service today, I'd like to invite you now to open your gray hymnal and stand as you're willing and able to sing our opening hymn number 311, Let It Be a Dance. And I'm going to ask Nick, our pianist, to play the main chorus through once before we begin singing. As you can see from the front cover of your Order of Service, there are many stewards of change who share Earth's dance floor with us. The dance floor I'm referring to, of course, includes every wave on every ocean and every pebble on every plain. We humans are not alone in these places, and we have a key responsibility to ensure that our human dancing isn't so wild that there isn't enough room left for all the other dancers. We depend upon them, too. For a full and beautiful life, and ultimately for our very existence on this planet too, I offer this reflection as I invite Judy and Bill Gaylord to come forward to light our chalice this morning. As you might have observed last week, teamwork when lighting the chalice is always a good thing. Now I'd like to invite the children to come forward to the mat or the blanket set up at the front here. Any child that would like to come forward. Our story for all ages this morning. And we have a great story to tell, which will be told by Martin himself, Martin Settle. So I hand it over to him.
Good morning. My name's Marty, and I brought my favorite book. Do you have a favorite book? Do you have a favorite book? Okay. Well, this book, it has lots of pictures, so I'm going to read it a bit slowly, and I'm going to hold it up high from time to time so some of the grown-ups can see, because some of the grown-ups sometimes forget that it's really neat to have pictures in a book. But this is a story kind of about how we care for one another, and we care for the things we have, and we create things new. It's called Something from Nothing. When Joseph was a baby, his grandfather made him a wonderful blanket. To keep him warm and cozy and to chase away bad dreams. But as Joseph grew older, the wonderful blanket grew older too. One day, his mother said to him, "Joseph, look at your blanket. It's frazzled. It's worn. It's unsightly. It's torn. It's time to throw it out." "Grandpa can fix it," Joseph said. Joseph's grandfather took the blanket and turned it round and round. He said, as his scissors went snip, 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 and his needle flew in and out, in and out, in and out. "There's just enough material here to make a wonderful jacket." Joseph put on the wonderful jacket and went outside to play. But as Joseph grew older, the wonderful jacket grew older too. One day his mother said to him, "Joseph, look at your jacket. It's shrunken and small. Doesn't fit you at all. It's time to throw it out." "Grandpa can fix it," Joseph said. Joseph's grandfather took the jacket and turned it round and round. He said, as his scissors went snip, 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 and his needle flew in and out, in and out, in and out. "There's just enough material here to make a wonderful vest." Joseph wore the wonderful vest to school the very next day. But as Joseph grew older, the vest grew older too. One day, his mother said, "Joseph, look at your vest. It's spotted with glue, and there's paint on it too. It's time to throw it out." "Grandpa can fix it," Joseph said. Joseph's grandfather took the vest and turned it round and round. He said, as his scissors went snip, 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 and the needle flew in and out, in and out, in and out. "There's just enough material here to make a wonderful tie." Most kids don't wear ties anymore. Joseph wore the wonderful tie to his grandparents' house every Friday. But as Joseph grew older, his wonderful tie grew older too. So one day, his mother said to him, "Joseph, look at your tie. This big stain of soup makes the end of it droop. It's time to throw it out. Grandpa can fix it," Joseph said. Joseph's grandfather took the tie and turned it round and round. He said, as his scissors went snip, 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 and his needle flew in and out, in and out, in and out. "There's just enough material here to make a wonderful handkerchief." A handkerchief is it's a piece of cloth that sometimes people use to blow their nose or to wash their face. But, no, not in that order. Good point. But Joseph used the wonderful handkerchief to keep his pebble collection safe. But as Joseph grew older, his wonderful handkerchief grew older too. One day his mother said to him, "Joseph, look at your handkerchief. It's been used till it's tattered, it's splotched, and it's splattered. It's time to throw it out. Grandpa can fix it," Joseph said. Joseph's grandfather took the handkerchief and turned it round and round. He said, as his scissors went snip, 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 and his needle flew in and out, in and out, in and out. "There's just enough material here to make a wonderful button." Joseph wore the wonderful button on his suspenders. Those are things that help keep his pants up. One day, his mother said to him, "Joseph, where is your button?" Joseph looked. It was gone. He searched everywhere, but he could not find it. Joseph ran down to his grandfather's house. "My button, my wonderful button is lost." His mother ran after him. "Joseph, listen to me. The button is gone, finished, kaput. Even your grandfather can't make something from nothing." Joseph's grandfather shook his head sadly. "I'm afraid that your mother is right," he said. The next day, Joseph went to school. He said, as his pen went scritch, scratch, scritch, scratch over the paper. "There's just enough material here to make a wonderful story." Lots of things that we can do with our lives, and all of them end up making good stories. So think about the stories that you're going to make today.
Thank you very much, Martin. And thank you to all the active listeners sitting down around the front here that we have with us today. And now to honor them, I'd like to invite the remaining adults to stand and sing our children on their way to their other programs. Adults who may be sitting on near the aisles, you can form the arches.
Thank you.
We'd like to take a short break at this time to welcome any visitors here. On behalf of this congregation, thank you for joining us today, making that special effort through the snow. Whether you are new to our congregation, or possibly an old friend or a member of the community returning after a long time, you are most welcome here. When it feels comfortable to do so, please accept our invitation to introduce yourself. You can do that by raising your hand so that we can bring you the microphone. Please note that this microphone works best if you speak right down into the, closely to it, put your, speak down the barrel if you like. So if there's any newcomers here, just raise your hand.
I'm not sure it qualifies as a newcomer. I'm Diana Smith. It's good to be here. I'm on a quest for daffodils and cherry blossoms for a few weeks. So far not doing so well, but it's wonderful to be here and to see everyone.
Welcome. Thanks, Bruce. After the service, newcomers are invited to join, I think it's Astrid, at the visitors' table to find out more about our First Unitarian Church. Not seeing that that's likely going to be a big requirement this morning. As I mentioned earlier, any newcomers are most welcome to join others in the Lion Hall for cookies, cakes, coffee, and, of course, conversation. And if that isn't enough, there's tea, too. So at this point, I'll ask Jim to come forward for the social responsibility moment.
Good morning. Today, our Share the Plate recipient is USC Canada, and they'll be allocated the whole plate rather than sharing it with our church today. Now, I want you all to think back 30 or 40 years ago. You're in your living room watching TV when the advertisements come on, and there on the screen is Dr. Lotta Hitchmanova asking for donations to the Unitarian Service Committee to help those suffering the aftermath of World War II, especially children. So can I see a show of hands for people who remember seeing Lotta Hitchmanova on TV? That's just about everybody, I think. Okay, so things have changed a lot since then, and there are other priorities which need our support. Today, USC Canada promotes vibrant family farms, strong rural communities, and healthy ecosystems. They're at work in Bangladesh, Bolivia, Burkina Faso, Canada, Cuba, Ethiopia, Guatemala, Honduras, Mali, Nepal, Nicaragua, and Timor-Leste. They help farmers to stay on their land and grow more healthy food for their families and communities. They also work to preserve the environment and enhance biodiversity. USC Canada's model has evolved to include farmer-led seed banks, seed breeding programs, training, and knowledge exchanges. Similar programs are now in more than 50 countries, many as a direct result of their involvement in a USC Canada training program. So I ask you to please give generously.
Thanks, Jim. So checks may be made out to the First Unitarian Church of Victoria. If you wish to have your offering included in our Share the Plate initiative, please write share in the memo line on your check or on the offering envelope. I would, in case I've made a mistake here, you can, if you're writing a check, you can put USC Canada on the check. Today, all Share the Plate contributions, including undesignated cash, will be designated to the USC, as Jim has mentioned. After the offering baskets have passed your row, anyone who feels moved to do so is invited to come to the chalice table to light a candle of remembrance and hope. A contribution to the baskets is not required to participate. To honor these acts, let us be in a spirit of mindfulness.
Thank you.
We have come here today to listen, but of equal importance, we are invited here to reflect for ourselves as individuals on what it means to be a steward of change, what it means for ourselves and what it means for the world of which we are a part. Within the web of our intersecting life journeys, change represents the currency of life. Without change, life ceases. At the very core of existence, change is the common denominator within every cycle and rhythm, short or long, in life itself. It is defined in every moment, in every movement, in every heartbeat. Never still, it moves within every frequency and beautiful expression that lends itself to the chorus that is our shared experience. And there is yet another kind of change, a transcendent kind of change that exists as part of the human experience too. Through this change, we seek to improve the quality of our relationships with one another or between ourselves and other features of the world as we define it. Change drives our awareness and our intelligence and moves us through processes of cognition, intention, action, maturation, revolution, and evolution. These changes have the power to lift us up and move us beyond where we are in every way that we can possibly imagine. I invite you now to participate in a short meditation from the beloved Buddhist teacher Thich Nhat Hanh as a way to prepare ourselves for looking deeply at stewardship and change with Martin. So please find a comfortable position, and if you feel so inclined, close your eyes if this feels right for you. Breathing deeply and slowing your breath. Breathing in, I know I am breathing in. Breathing out, I know I am breathing out. Breathing in, I see myself as a flower. Breathing out, I feel fresh. Breathing in, I see myself as a mountain. Breathing out, I feel solid. Breathing in, I see myself as still water. Breathing out, I reflect all that is. Breathing in, I see myself as space. Breathing out, I feel free.
Good morning once again. It really is wonderful to be joining you this morning, and I really do want to offer my deepest appreciation for both the invitation to come speak to you once again, and also for the generosity of this community, and both to share the plate and in all the other ways that members of your community support USC Canada and have supported USC Canada through many years. One of the risks of writing out a text to read is that you don't get to be responsive to what's happening. I just am so appreciative of the spirit of this place. I had the opportunity to look back while I was planning this morning on my speech that I gave 2 years ago when I joined this community. I spoke then of the decades of partnership between Canadian Unitarians and USC Canada. And so it's actually a deep pleasure and an honor to be continuing to tend to that partnership today as I come to visit with you. It is 2 years later, and unfortunately, our world remains broken. It remains broken in all kinds of ways. On climate change, we continue to see the atmospheric content of carbon dioxide rise. So much so that in 2019, just these last 2 months, the Moana Observatory in Hawaii has already increased the record for the highest daily average measurement 7 times. Our global leaders continue to gather yearly as part of the COP process from the Rio Convention to discuss strategies to mitigate climate change. But at least in Canada, there continues to be a lack of coordinated and effective action. The long-awaited federal carbon tax, coming from Ottawa, I'm supposed to say the price on pollution, has only just begun. But even then, there's been a lack of positive promotion, and that's led to it to become the boogeyman of reactive provincial governments and of federal politicians. This is despite strong evidence from the long-standing program here in BC, and now the newer and fairly remarkable data coming out of Alberta, that carbon taxes are effective, if still an insufficient response to the global crisis. On peace and security, the world seems to be moving again in the wrong direction. Long held up as a model of stability in Western Africa, in 2013, Mali tumbled into civil war, in part attributable to a diaspora and heightened Islamic nationalism that resulted from the violent overthrow of the Libyan government, mostly by northern nations. Mali has never recovered. In Ethiopia, food shortages and stressors caused by a growing Sudanese refugee population led to rioting in the south of the nation, which in turn, I shouldn't really say led to because it isn't an appropriate response, but led to a government crackdown and martial law. In Bangladesh, growing religious conflict has led to attacks on foreign nationals living in the country. In Nicaragua, student and union protests against changes to public pension plans that were mandated by international lenders were met with government intransigence and violent suppression. In Honduras, gang violence and corruption in municipal governments helps to mask increased corporate targeting of human rights and land protectors, like Berta Cáceres. And of course, the United States itself continues to experience a normalization of mass gun violence. Against this backdrop of climate change and violence, we are seeing a rebirth in nationalism and isolationist rhetoric, patterns of thought that were captured and used to great effect by the Trump election campaign and since by his government. But sadly, it doesn't end there. red make where I live again hats are appearing, make where I live great again hats are appearing all over the world, as if there was some kind of magical time that where I live was actually great. Trump's success has emboldened an underbelly of Canadian society. Racists proudly donning yellow vests to demand closed borders and decry the United Nations, seemingly unaware that it is the United Nations Charter of Rights that provides the protection for the freedom of speech that they're so afraid of losing. Anyway, the list of the ways the world remains broken could go on and on and on. These are macro issues that frame the lives that we are living. But often, I believe, even those lives are contributing to our own brokenness. We live in a culture, increasingly a global culture, that upholds individualism and independence above all else. There is a myriad of effects that this focus on individualism has, putting us into competition against each other, turning success and failure into personal rather than collective results, and ultimately creating a social system that literally and figuratively pushes us into a one-occupant car rather than a multi-passenger bus. Our very lives are disconnecting. They disconnect us from each other. They disconnect us from our spiritual homes. They disconnect us from the world. We eat fast food. We socialize on our phones, even when in rooms filled with people. We overlook the turning of the tide and the setting of the sun. We raise children who think milk comes from a carton, not a cow. Our isolated and disconnected lives leave us feeling marginal and powerless, particularly in the face of the enormous global issues that I started out detailing. Ultimately, these lives are lonely and rootless. Not only have we broken the world, but we've broken ourselves. If we're going to find our way back, if we're going to be able to address the challenges of our world, then we need to find ways to reconnect. We need to find ways to reintegrate our lives. I mentioned 2 years ago when I was here that I'm a religious person myself, having grown up in the United Church and still participating in it. Personally, I believe that some of what we as a culture need to rediscover and reintegrate is spiritual practices that open us to one another and to the world. Key to that for me is the concept of stewardship. Growing up as I did in the 1970s and 1980s, I was not exposed to a lot of Hitchmanova, but I was exposed to the idea of stewardship through both my church and through the fledgling environmental movement. Drawing on the Judeo-Christian stories of creation, environmentalists pointed to humans as having a special obligation to protect, care for, and preserve the world. At the time, it played out in demand for conservation. The World Wildlife Fund encouraged us to buy up acres of rainforest. We were asked to save the whales, to recycle paper, to get McDonald's to stop using styrofoam packaging. All of these are good things, but even together they are insufficient and are only a small fraction of what our stewardship needs to be. In 2004, I moved to England. Bear with me for a moment because this is actually a connected thought. England is a remarkable place, much like Vancouver Island, in fact. Its space is limited by oceans all around it. Unlike Vancouver Island, though, England has been intentionally shaped by human inhabitants for several millennia. Just to be clear, I'm not saying that Vancouver Island hasn't been inhabited for millennia, only that the people indigenous to this land did not live in ways that changed the land as the European and Asian immigrants would. In England, such change was intentional, and it is evident. There's not a single square inch of the British Isles that has not been touched and shaped by human intervention. There's actually a movie out that I would encourage you to see, even though I haven't seen it myself, called Anthropocene, a documentary that details and looks at the world through the way that humans have changed it. But for me, this is where the idea of stewardship as conservation really does start to fall apart. What exactly are we trying to conserve? Some natural state that no longer exists? Some previous state where human intervention had only changed things so much? Thinking about conservation in this way actually brings to mind the Make Where I Live Great Again hats. I don't know why I have trouble saying that. It's like trying to preserve or go back to some previous state, which, if you step back and take any rational assessment, wasn't good enough. Stewardship is not about conservation, because as humans, we have the power to shape things, to mold the world, to create. Stewardship is about using that power, not to abuse, not to create even more unsustainable lifestyles or systems, but rather to work with the natural processes and the feedback systems of nature to generate something better. In effect, to co-create. Like the grandfather in the children's story, our role is to examine what is not working and using what is there to create something that does. In the end, we create a narrative of human stewardship that reconnects us to the world and to each other. I believe that this is the work of USC Canada, and I'm not going to detail a lot of that work. We do have a table at the back hallway, and I'll be around if you want to talk more, but the introduction earlier did actually give a lot of detail as to what we do and the kind of work we do. But we are working with farmers and with the support of people like you to co-create new models for food production that help to reconnect people, the land, and communities. This is good and, I believe, faithful work. It is envisioning a future in which people have agency in their production and consumption. Agency that's actually lacking for all of us in our over-corporate, industrialized, and globalized food system. It's envisioning a future in which there is more equitable distribution of and access to the fruits of food production. Equity that is currently absent in both the distribution of the food needed for all to thrive and in the sharing of the financial returns of our food system. A better future is possible. It doesn't involve a return to a romanticized past. It doesn't involve trying to conserve and preserve the inadequacies of this moment. It does involve recognizing that change is, in fact, inevitable, and embracing that change with a desire to steward and co-create the next state, and knowing that even it will not be good enough. Stewardship is ongoing. Little steps that take us ever closer to an unreachable end. Ultimately, stewardship involves taking risk. Risking change and the possibility of loss that comes with that. But tending to the risk with extreme care, applying knowledge, seeking advice, moving slowly, invoking the precautionary principle. When we accept that change is inevitable, we have to engage in stewardship. Accepting that change is inevitable is a struggle for any individual, and particularly for groups. Over 74 years of history, USC Canada has had its own struggles to accept the inevitability of change. But in the last 2 years, a number of events made us realize we are facing a significant barrier. The majority of Canadians no longer recognize the name USC Canada. Younger Canadians, the future supporters on which we depend, never knew Lotta Hitchmanova. The first question anybody asks us is always the same. What does USC stand for? I joked about this question when I spoke to you 2 years ago. Of course, we're proud of our history. We're proud of our association with Unitarians. We're especially proud of Lotta's contribution to Canadian society and the way she exhorted us to look beyond our borders and become the caring nation that we pride ourselves in being. With that pride, we happily share our history. Unfortunately, speaking to new people, you generally get about a 2-minute window of interest. Explaining our nearly 75 years of evolution tends to use that 2 minutes up. And all too often, the jump from our post-war beginnings to what we do now, supporting farmers in their fight for justice, health, and sustainability, is too vast. We confuse people, and we lose them. So, with much soul-searching, in October of 2017, the board of directors gave Jane and I the mandate to work with staff, the board, long-standing supporters, and marketing experts to find a new name for our organization. It was a long journey to come to that decision. I can tell you that changing the name was debated at my first board meeting when I joined as treasurer in 2009. And talking to others, I know that it's been a recurring discussion for decades. The decision was not undertaken lightly, and we have accepted the responsibility as careful stewards. More than 140 options have been considered and weighed. The most promising ones were put to the test through focus groups we organized with 25 people of all ages. And just last month, the board and the voting members of USC Canada made a final choice. We plan to unveil this new name next fall so that we can start 2020, our 75th year, with a bold statement of who we are and where the organization is heading. With a strong, recognizable, and clear name, we can continue working with farmers to build a better world, making it a kinder, gentler place, as Lotta would have said, hopefully long into the future. Unitarians have been our longest-standing supporters and the early builders of our organization. So I do want to share our new name with you first today. Our new name will be Seed Change. It takes some time sometimes to get used to a new name, so I hope you will give it a chance to grow on you, especially if you don't love it right away. Of course, this decision is bittersweet. We're very attached to our history, and we know our loyal supporters, some of whom have been giving to us for more than 50 years, have deep personal attachments and memories associated with this name. That history and that name will not be erased, but will be cherished and honored as we move forward. As I said, the new name won't be made public for at least 6 more months, but I wanted to let this community know first. If you are a long-standing donor, we plan to send an advance preview of the new look that will accompany the name shortly before the new name launches. I do hope you'll see the merits of this big decision and accompany us in this change. I left business cards on most of the chairs. I missed the front 2 rows over here. Because I really would appreciate hearing your views. Is this a name that could grow on you the way it's grown on our board and our staff over time? Even more particularly, Do you have thoughts about how we can make this transition smoother for Unitarians as a community? We think seed change, as one word, is a name that is simple, optimistic, and easy to remember. Three things that mattered most to us. It helps people make sense of what we do, seeds and farming, but also puts forth the reason why we do this work, to create lasting positive change. I really have no way of knowing for sure, but Jane, my executive director partner, and I think that Lotta would have approved of the name. Lotta had a knack for making an impression. The fact that she remains such a recognizable figure for so many proves it. But she was also a very driven, no-nonsense, and efficient kind of person who put her organization's ability to deliver above all else. One long-standing donor who knew Lotta told us that, in her opinion, if Lotta had been faced with the need to change her organization's name to open new doors into the hearts of younger Canadians, she would have said, "Just do it." Though probably not in that accent. So I take comfort in that. In closing, I want to reiterate our appreciation and respect for everything this community has done through USC Canada. Your values as Unitarians remain our own. They are the founding principles that inform our vision. The generosity and dedication of Unitarians will always be the ground on which we are built and continues to be critical to allowing us to deliver on the work we do. But seed change is also an invitation to you and to communities of shared values across Canada and around the world. We, that being the Royal Capitalist Global we've paved a road to a future of climate change, of violence, of isolation, and otherism. We, the USC Canada, Unitarian, and others who share our values, we are starting to see cracks in that pavement. Our invitation is to get out there, to plant seeds in those cracks, and to steward the inevitable change that is to come. This is how we heal the world. This is how we reconnect. This is how we build lives of meaning, sustainability, resilience, and ultimately joy. We don't seek to prevent change. We embrace it. We embrace it with faith, with trust, and with a commitment to co-create for a better future. So I welcome you to seed change with us. Thank you.
I'd like to invite you now to open your gray hymnal and stand as you're willing and able to sing hymn number 112, "Do You Hear?" And once again, I'll ask Nick to play it through once before we begin.
Thank you.
Before we extinguish our challenge, I wish to thank Martin not only for his inspiring and informative words today, but for his example in what it looks like to be an agent of change, and indeed a steward of change, to use his phrasing. On behalf of this UU community, I thank you sincerely for coming to speak with us today. In closing, I would like to add that no combination or permutation of words from the dictionary, Oxford or Scrabble or otherwise, can substitute for the fine example that USC Canada, now soon to be Seed Change, sets through its meaningful efforts to bring positive change. So now I'd like to invite you all to stand as you're able and willing to sing our farewell song, Carry the Flame.